We're here at Menards Bag Sale, asking shoppers what they're putting in the bag to get 15% off.
Paint.
Batteries.
Tools.
Toilet paper.
Extension cords. Grocery items.
Hardware for my cabinets.
Snack items. Crackers and some canned good stuff.
Shop vac supplies.
Toothpaste, cereal, coffee, dog treats. I've got a lot of stuff to grab.
The list goes on, but the sale ends January 24th. Hurry in for Menards 15% off bag sale. See store for complete details.
Save big money at Menards.
Don't you think it's about time for a podcast that's more fulfilling? One that's about the vibrant exchange of ideas and perspectives that happens when we actually come together? We got you covered.
Welcome to the Deep Blue Project,
where the depths of conversation meet the waves of personal experience. This is a real, raw, and unscripted show about everything from leadership lessons to self-awareness, wellness, and the latest current events. We cover it all. We have a rotating cast of guests as we share our personal stories, insights, and opinions on the issues that matter most. Plus, we have a blast while doing it.
The Deep Blue Project. It's not just a podcast. It's an experience. And now your host, Chris Workman.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to another episode of DBP, the Deep Blue Project. I am so lucky today to have who has become a quick friend of mine, Elizabeth Pohl, with me. She is the founder of Resilient Heroes. And Liz and I are just going to have some conversations that might touch on, you know, officer trauma and police suicide, because it's something that is very important nowadays. And I think we are just going to see where this goes and get into it. Hey, Liz, how you doing?
Hi, how are you? Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
It's awesome. I'm glad to have you here. So Liz, how about we let the audience know a little bit about Resilient Heroes and about you?
So I am a Chicago police officer. I'm still active with 20 years on the job. I have a master's in forensic psychology and did a bunch of clinical work, went on to do work with suicide psychological autopsies, and just been doing a lot of work in that area. And with the work that I've been doing with suicide psychological autopsies, which is really dissecting a suicide and trying to psychologically and going back into the individual's life and really just trying to see how the suicide ideation manifested itself and just trying to get as much information as we can as far as risk factors that were present and just protective factors that may have diminished or were absent completely, and just get as much information as we can. Having done that work, I got involved with wanting to put together a curriculum, if you will, and just overall trauma and suicide psychoeducation for first responders. And that's where Resilient Heroes was born. So I started a not-for-profit, and ultimately the goal was to start getting this conversation going about trauma and suicide and get it out to agencies across the United States.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, we know, you know, as a lot of people say and things that we talk about, that we know that suicide among first responders, even law enforcement officers, is really on the increase. And it's something that's very important for us to do. So as you kind of move forward with Resilient Heroes in some of your classes, what are some of the things that you kind of focus on?
So first and foremost, when I put this together, it was important to not just put out some other training. As a police officer, I've sat through training, you've sat through training, and sometimes it's just unbearable, right?
Right.
So I felt that it was important to do things a little differently than what we usually sit through, where it was important to start something where, yes, we're able to fill that gap of knowledge, right, that we have and try to understand more about trauma and suicide as it relates to us as first responders. So for me, it was important to make this a interactive conversation, if you will. We still cover a lot of the information where it's very informative and you get the knowledge, but it was very important to have this in a setting where we're able to hear from each other in a conversation format. So there's a bit of scenario-based training It's very interactive. There is a little PowerPoint just to kind of lead, but overall, it's really hearing the first responders in the room get to share whatever they know or don't know, what their questions are, and just really kind of cover it in that format. There's a lot of information that we're lacking when it comes to suicide. Ultimately, someone takes their life and we're left with so many questions and so many things that we don't understand. And it seems as though we have this cycle of insanity that I call, where an officer dies by suicide. We're all left with so many emotions and thoughts and questions. No one really talks about it, whether it's because we just don't feel comfortable talking about it. We don't have enough knowledge on it. But 5 to 7 days after the individual's death, we're back to business as usual until the next suicide. And it's kind of like, well, nothing's changing. We're not doing anything differently here, and we're expecting different results. I mean, that is the definition of insanity. Right. So I, a long time ago, very early on in my career as a young officer, saw this happening. And I felt like there was so much that we were lacking in understanding and so much that we should be talking about and we should be educated on that we weren't. And so that's kind of the goal of what I've created and how I want to move forward to try to give everybody the tools to be able to not only understand for themselves, but for others as a whole, really understand what it is that we experience, especially after doing this job, what others may be experiencing that we can pick up on, and just how to move forward with that and how to try to be more proactive versus reactive and, you know, try to start reducing the number of individuals in crisis before they get to the point of feeling that suicide is the only way.
Yeah, I think that we've had a lot of them conversations in some of the prior episodes that we've had with the Deep Blue Project. And something that I think is very important. So I'm so happy that it kind of led that way. When I started this, you didn't know kind of, you're like, where am I going to start with this and what's going to come out of it? And it just happened. And I think it was just led that way. Maybe it was just kind of intervention that led that way to say that we're talking about the mental health and wellness portion of what we do as first responders. And I think you hit on a great topic. And the fact is we have that it's okay to not be okay thing, but it's hard to get that message across, I think, to the older generation. And I say, I am in that older generation. If you have 20 years on this job, like that was like, my God, like, don't talk about that. Like,
right.
That is the biggest no-no. I don't want to bring up my feelings, suck it up and move on. Like, right. You need to deal with it. But we all know there's some point, and I've had to do it myself. I finally got to the point 20 some years in, and I was a firefighter for 10 years prior to that. I'm sorry, 12 years prior to that. So my life has been filled with watching trauma and seeing crap. I wouldn't put half the crap in my head in anybody's brain,
right.
Number one. But I finally had to come to that point where I needed to go talk to somebody. I'm watching television, and I'm watching like Grey's Anatomy.
Yeah.
And I'm watching this scene that like any other time wouldn't bother me. And I'm starting to tear up and almost bawling over something.
Right.
And I'm like, what the hell is happening to me?
Possibly so, triggering up something deeper. Yeah.
So you're like, okay, I start going to therapy. I started going to someone and having to have some outlet to talk to someone. And I think that if you're going to be a person that wants to talk about the wellness and health and mental wellness of your people, well, you can't do it if you ain't done it yourself. It's helped me cope better. I'm not going to say it took everything away, but it helped me more see those things that I was pushing aside.
Absolutely. One of the things that in this training, when I do the psychoeducation training for everyone, you talk about so many of these pieces that you just mentioned. But the biggest thing that people don't seem to understand is that when we do this job, because we're human beings, it's only a matter of when, not if, but when any of this will catch up with us. Because the level of trauma, the things, you know, that we see that may, in a sense, even seem like, oh, well, that wasn't so traumatizing, or, you know, I got over that. These things stay with us and they will bother you one way or another, even if you try to kind of just, you know, suppress it or, you know, put it away somewhere deep, deep, far away. It always finds a way to come back. And it's something that needs to be dealt with ultimately. And it just varies person to person, you know, how you deal with it and what you're going to do, what resource you're going to use that works for you, because it's not one size fits all. But I do feel that no matter what you've experienced, especially when it comes to trauma, one way or another, it's going to catch up with you. It's going to be an issue at some point down the road. It may not, for some people, it may not be immediately after or during the time of the trauma. It could be months later. It could be years later. It could be in retirement. You know, when we're talking about this job, right? Everybody wants to go and, you know, retire and be done with it. And then you think, this is the greatest time of my life. I wanted to retire, wanted to be done. This is all behind me. And then people actually find that a lot of it really starts to come up during that period of time, which they're not expecting. But that's the reality of trauma and a lot of the things that we experience on this job. There's a lot of thoughts, a lot of memories, a lot of things that we are exposed to, and it's there.
Right. I think that what you're doing and having Brilliant Heroes Project and the things that you're out there doing is key. I think that's key to having, and I know what you say. Like, you said it right off the bat, and it's like, cops, you want to put them in training, and they're like, or you want to give them this training, you're like, oh, no, you're going to resiliency training, but we're going to talk to you about your feelings. And they're like,
right,
no. What are you, crazy? Like, so what kind of feedback do you feel that you're getting as you've been doing this?
So a lot of what we talk about are a lot of the things that really relate to us, right? Mostly a lot of the information, I wanted it to resonate with us. How does this really affect us? How does it relate to us? And how will we be able to actually have individuals walk away with, like, I actually learned something from this? The one thing I didn't want was another training, and I hate calling it training because really it's a psychoeducation, really it's educating psychologically in a way of all this information, but not in a way where we're a classroom full of academia, because I think that's sometimes where they miss the mark, where we have some great trainers and professors or whatever that come in from some company and they want to, you know, teach us all this information, and it's great stuff and it makes sense. But again, I feel like they don't know the audience. We're not a room full of academia, college students. We are officers are dealing with some of the stuff that they want to teach us, but you have to understand how we're going to be experiencing all of this. Trying to make clinicians out of us, that's not what they're there for, right? So really being able to relate it in the real world, in our experiences when we deal with the public and all of that, that's, you know, or for ourselves, that's what we really need help with. So a lot of the information we talk about, a lot of those taboo things that we don't like to talk about, right, that are uncomfortable, but it's time. It's what we need to do. We talk about trauma before, you know, people that have gone through trauma prior to the job that don't realize that this is still an issue, or from when we were kids, right? And
right.
Things that on the job we experience trigger suicide. We talk about some cases that I've actually conducted of the autopsies. And psychologically, like, we go into all the risk factors of some actual redacted cases that I've conducted. And it's incredibly sad that we find all this information, but it's also incredibly valuable that we start to see what it is that individuals are dealing with. What is it that is contributing to them spiraling so deep into a dark place that they feel that there's nothing left. So people actually enjoy the fact that they're like, wow, we haven't even heard this information before. We didn't know this was a thing. We're getting more answers now to try to really understand. You don't have to agree with what the individual has chosen to do by taking their life, right? But it's kind of just understanding, like, from their perspective, like, wow, what individuals go through and how it gets to a point where people feel like they just no longer feel that they can go on and continue with the pain that they're feeling. And they just want it, they want it to stop. They want it to end. And unfortunately, based on like what's going on with them psychologically and with other factors involved, people start to see like, wow, I can almost understand how this what came about, how it manifested, and how the individual ended up here. And it's a lot. It's a lot of information. We also talk about cannot and do not like to talk about. And I'm very realistic in what it is that our lifestyle really is as police officers. Yes. And it's a lot of that information that we need to start getting through and talking about, because it's very real. Interpersonal relationships, there's a lot of issues when it comes to that. There's divorce, there's cheating, there's juggling marriages, all of this stuff. These are very realistic topics that relate to us and that we have to start talking about, even if they're uncomfortable. And so a lot of people tend to tell me that when they walk away and they come talk to me, especially after, a lot of people are just kind of like, wow, there's so much that I just didn't know. That's the point of all of this, that I have found that there is a lot of information that even myself at some point in my life, I didn't know until I was fully educated on this. Right. And really just started getting involved and trying to discover more information that we need to address.
Yeah, I think one of them.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to get stronger just around the corner, so you can give everything you've got. Whether you want to crush a few reps before class with our expanded strength equipment or sweat it out on your way home from work. With over 2,800 locations, there's a Planet Fitness close to you, and most are open 24 hours. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends January 30th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
Most amazing things in since we got to kind of getting together on LinkedIn and some of the things that I've read that you do. That was amazing part to me was the psychological suicide autopsies. I think that is just something that people do not have a clue about. And I never had a clue about it before now. But when you talk about it in that way, it's great for that to be happening, because it does just what you said. It gives those people you're talking to the opportunity to see how did it get to that point. And I think one of the things that I think just sitting here as you're speaking is, if we're talking about all of that, where was a point where I could have jumped in and said, I saw that? Or why didn't I say something when I saw that?
You tend to find that a lot of people are kind of obviously very emotional. They have, you know, an emotional response to it. But there's also a lot of, you know, he was fine or she was fine. We were just hanging out the other day. I can't believe this happened. It seems like they can't seem to really put the behavior that they, you know, that would be an indicator, or any kind of information that would be indicative of this, like they're just so shocked. And so once we start asking certain questions and they start thinking about things and they start giving you more information than they out, and then they start to realize, my goodness, those were indicators or those were symptoms and signs that we want to start doing, is taking a proactive approach where if we're able to have more knowledge on something and be able to just simply pick up on some cues, something that we would know, hey, that's something to kind of just red flag. Let's start paying attention. We might have a little bit of different results. We might be able to at least get a conversation going with individuals like, hey, are you okay? What's going on? You know, I noticed that you're struggling here or whatnot, or I've noticed this behavior. And then you just get more information out. I like to give this analogy of, you know, if we were in a room and a pipe burst. I know nothing about plumbing at all whatsoever. I would probably just freak out, call a plumber and be like, get the hell over here right now. So I like to give this example because it's very much something that's very similar to what I see in a lot of like these suicides, especially when I do these interviews of these autopsy cases. The pipe breaks. You call the plumber. Plumber shows up. Water everywhere. Plumber says, hey, did you notice anything the last couple of days? And I'm like, no, there's just water everywhere. Get this, like, fix this. Like, my house is ruined. And then the plumber will kind of guide me a little more with some questions, in a sense that it'll be like, well, did you notice any kind of like a banging sound in the last couple of days? And then as I think about it, you mention it, there was a banging sound 2 days ago, something, you know, but it wasn't too loud. And I figured, I didn't hear it again, whatever, who cares? And he's like, did you notice any wet spots or any leaking? And it's like, well, now that you mention that, I happen to notice a little bit of like water, you know, but again, right. Dried up, no issue. I was like, old pipes, who cares, right? And at that point, the plumber lets me know, well, Liz, this was indicative of this particular break. And so here we are. And it's kind of like, I get it. And I find that when it comes to suicide and it comes to a lot of like crisis with individuals, there are indicators, there are symptoms, there are things that are present, behaviors that we'll see. But if we don't know enough about it,
right.
How could we point it out or how could we do anything about it? So I find that when I do a lot of this psychological suicide autopsy work, there's a lot of information that I feel we can use. And that's what I started to do, was create something where we can proactively start discussing like, hey, these are some of the things that you may or may not see, right? That you may pick up on. And so here's what we can do about it so that we don't find ourselves just completely blindsided by this and just kind of, I saw nothing. Person was perfectly fine. Usually there's something there. There are indicators. And so by talking about this stuff and putting it out there, we may be able to pick up on it. It's not to put blame on anyone. Sometimes some individuals, when we do these autopsies, people have brought up to me like, well, aren't people hesitant to work with you in doing these because they may feel afraid like, oh my God, I'm going to find out I missed something. Well, you know what? Here's the thing. First of all, it's not to put blame on anyone, not the agency, not individuals, because some of these things happen, but no one really knows. No one is aware of things that are looking them in the face because they just have no knowledge. So I really wanted to try to get to the root of the problem and try to see how we can maybe try to turn it around a little bit. I'm not naive. I know that we're not going to save every single person. But if we can actually maybe one family, one other first responder, you know, that we can potentially save from having to go through this, that would be great.
I think that's everybody, when we come down to it, it's a very tough situation. Mm-hmm. Like a taboo like conversation, right? Nobody wants to talk about suicide in the room. However, it's becoming so prevalent. In my life, I've had two individuals who were people that I knew who committed suicide. And you know, I just remember looking back myself going, was there any time that I ever mm-hmm. saw that, you know, that blinking red light? And
yeah.
And if you look back, sometimes there was no blinking red light. There might have been a lot of yellow. And you try to figure that and go, is there anything else that I could have done or that I missed because you work or you spend time with this person? And I can understand how that would protrude on the other people when you're trying to do these suicide right. autopsies. I can see that because they might be a little reluctant to go, yeah, was it my fault? Did I miss right. that? Especially people that were really, really, really close to them.
There's little pieces of information that while we're discussing and talking, and again, this is where my forensic psychology comes into play. There's pieces of information, there are words that they're saying, and there's pieces that I just pick up on, and I'm like, hold on a second.
Wait.
Something that doesn't seem so relevant to the interviewee, I pick up on, and I'm like, hold on. And I kind of go in a little further, and then I'm able to pick up on certain behaviors. Something may not seem relevant, but again, if you're not trained to really pick up on that and you don't really understand it, I mean, there's no blame to the individual. So it's kind of like, well, this is where we need to start having these conversations and start bringing this all to light.
I think that leads me into something that is great that you're doing. And I want to touch on that because you've already kind of touched base on some of the problems and the triggers. I want to talk for your Hope for Heroes. You have that listed on your website, and we'll give the website out
yeah.
later once we get finished. I really recommend you guys, you know, visit and check it out.
We just talk about so much from trauma, stress. We do cover mental health, right? We don't, in a way where, again, it relates to us and overall our mental health when it comes to this job and our personal lives, right? It's not just all the diagnoses and stuff like that. One of the biggest things that people think about when they think about like mental health and like the diagnoses, oh, we're all going to be labeled. And it's like, no, we talk about, we don't all necessarily have to be diagnosed with a mental illness. It doesn't mean you have depression. And so those are a lot of the things that we need to discuss and go over. We talk about other things, like I mentioned, the alcohol and the drugs. And no, it is not a you should not be drinking class. Like, no one's going to tell us not to drink. Let's just clarify that real quick, okay? Because we are all grown adults and we can make choices to engage in our drinking if we like. It's more of a question of why are we drinking when we are? There's a difference between myself going out to dinner tonight and wanting to have a couple of drinks with my friends at dinner, and then maybe we go out afterward and we're dancing. That's totally fine. Or you want to go out tonight with your friends and go to a festival and engage in some beers or whatever it is that you want to drink. Again, totally fine. Question becomes, what's going on and why are you drinking? If you've been up into your head and your children or you're in a different environment that brings up, you know, the memories of that call that you dealt with, I don't know, an abuse of a child. So we get into a lot of talks like that and really just get to the bottom of like what that's all about and what it is that you're experiencing and what it is that you know, how we deal with that? How do we ultimately deal with that? How do we shut off those thoughts? How do we handle the fact that we can't lay our heads on a pillow to try to go to sleep because our thoughts are racing at 1,000 miles per second? And it has a lot to do with stuff we've seen. It has to do with stuff in our personal life, you know, all those anxieties and all of that. We cover a lot of that. And then we like to sometimes knock ourselves out with a drink or medication or whatever. Because I mean, I need to sleep and I can't. So that's kind of like an example of a lot of what we talk about from that psychoeducation standpoint. We talk about interdepartmental issues because this is a real thing. Look at the climate today and what we're dealing with. Policing in itself, you know, is not very easy nowadays. There's so much that you have to, it used to be what's going to happen, what's the outcome going to be. There's a lot at stake. There's a lot of pressure and, you know, everyone's watching, everyone's wanting to scrutinize. So these are very realistic things that we go through. So we cover a lot of that. And then overall, I just really feel that it's necessary for first responders to understand that when we get involved in this line of work, there are things that will happen, right? To us, to our bodies, to our minds, et cetera. And we have to start to understand what they are. We can lie to everyone and know. Would you ever imagine in your life that you'd be going into a stranger's home and you're making decisions and telling people what to do and when you don't even know these people? We're in control all the time. We're called to come take action. But we have a hard time when it comes to sometimes taking control of our own lives and our own psyche and all of that we're experiencing because we don't know how to be out of control. Right? So we need to start understanding what we're experiencing, how to go about handling things in our lives, right? Especially when we're struggling, so that we can get through that and not have to get to a point where we're in such crisis and it's that much harder to get out of. So teaching everyone how to self-advocate and what that looks like is another thing that we really talk about. If things are not going well for me, right, I know when something's off with me. I may not tell everyone else and I may lie to everyone else, but ultimately, what do I do if things are off with me? And I don't necessarily want to start talking to everybody about it. What direction do I go? Where do I begin?
Right.
What resources are available? These are a lot of the things that we really want to get out there, get people talking about, have people really have the knowledge and options.
Oh, that's fantastic. I think going forward, you and I, we've been doing this for a long time. I mean, we've got our build-up thoughts. We have our build-up, you know, things that we think about when it comes to our own mental health with what we feel. It just was ingrained in us too early.
You know, I find that a lot of supervisors from understanding out what they're supposed to day to day. But when it comes to this, it's kind of like, well, we don't know much on what to look for and how to deal with this and even how to talk to people about stuff when they come to us, right? Because now we're doing a little more pushing on wellness in different agencies and say what to do. And these are a lot of the things that we need to cover as well. Again, recruit that in-service officer who's been on the job, first responder, firefighter, anybody who's been on the job for a while, all the way into retirement. We talk about retirement also. that's something that is difficult to transition to. We're so excited. We want to get off this job, but retirement is something that we're not ready for until we're in it. And a lot of retirees are also kind of like left off on their own because they're no longer part of the agency, if you will. It's still a lifestyle that you led for so many years. It becomes a part of your identity. So that's important. But Resilient Heroes, it's www.resilient-heroes.com. You can go on the website. We have information there. Because we are a not-for-profit, we can get this training out to agencies, even if they're not able to pay for the training. We do want to make sure that we get this out to all the agencies, as many agencies across the United States, without budget, finance, all of that being an issue. Because there are a lot of agencies whose city, township, whatever it may be that funds their training. A lot of the training that we get, it's that mandated training that has to be done annually. And then there's nothing really left or no time for stuff like this, where it becomes the self-care resources that we need for us. And so that's why for me, creating Resilient Heroes was super important, because I felt like when it comes to trauma and suicide, we're not doing enough.
That's great, Liz. Thank you very much. I appreciate you being here. I always enjoy talking to you. I'm sure we will have Liz on later episodes, but I felt this was very, very important. The work that she's doing is very important. Please go to her website, like she said, resilient-heroes.com. Check her out. Check her out on, she's on LinkedIn if you want to catch her on there, Elizabeth Pohl. She is fabulous with what she's trying to do, and I wish you the best, Liz. Until the next time, you stay safe. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Deep Blue Project. As a father, husband, friend, and someone who loves to chat about anything and everything, Chris brings over 3 decades of public service experience to the table. With a background in firefighting and law enforcement, along with degrees in criminal justice and behavioral science, he's seen it all, and he's learned a thing or two along the way. We hope you enjoyed the show. If you did, make sure to like, rate, and review. We'll be back soon. But in the meantime, find us on LinkedIn and X at Deep Blue Project. Find our website at deepblueproject.com. And to reach out, send an email to deepblueproject@outlook.com. Keep keeping it real. And we'll see you next time on the Deep Blue Project.